Representative Bonamici's here.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Committee on Finance and Revenue. It's May the 22nd, and we're going to open up a public hearing at this time on House Bill 3482. Good morning, Representative. How are you?
Good morning. Very well, thank you.
Would you allow Paul to go ahead and describe the bill for us?
Absolutely.
Okay. Briefly, thank you, Mr. Chair. What 3482A does is it amends the statute regarding the Oregon Facilities Authority. The authority was set up to recommend issuance of conduit bonds to finance projects submitted by nonprofit organizations. These bonds are all repaid through revenue generated by the project itself. What the bill does is expand the list of institutions eligible for financing to include all qualified nonprofits. It expands the authority membership from 5 to 7 and specifies that the members serve at the pleasure of the treasurer. It deletes a requirement that no more than 3 members of the authority be from one political party.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Senator George, Senator Monroe. Thank you for having me here today. I'm Representative Suzanne Bonamici. I represent House District 34 in Washington County. Thank you for holding this hearing today on House Bill 3482, which I was pleased to sponsor on behalf of the Office of the State Treasurer. The staff has done an excellent job of summarizing the components of the bill. I'm basically here to introduce it and to thank you for holding the hearing. There are people here from the Treasurer's Office who will be able to answer any questions. I wanted to introduce the bill and say thank you very much. We had a broad support for the bill in the House, just a couple of no votes, overwhelming bipartisan support for this bill that will help the Oregon Facilities Authority do the good work it does for our state. So again, thank you for holding this hearing. I'd be happy to answer questions, although I may be deferring them to the people from the Facilities Authority and from the Treasurer's Office.
My first blush on the bill was a little bit concerned about the elimination of having some equality as far as, political party type thing. The more I thought about that, I thought, well, this is really not a partisan issue in any way, and we became comfortable with that. I mean, any comment on that?
Senator George, I agree with you, Senator George and Senator Monroe and staff. I agree with you on that. It's not typical at all to have political party affiliation on this type of entity, and it doesn't make sense, and that's why it's being eliminated in this bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thanks for coming down for
us. You're welcome. Thank you for having me. Thank you again. I urge you to support this bill and move it on.
We will. Yes, go ahead, sir.
You actually think there might be smart people in both parties?
Chair George, Senator Monroe, committee, yes, I do. Thank you.
That's
okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Senator Wessel is here.
Senator Wessel, were you here on 3482?
35.
Okay, we'll be just a few minutes because we're just going to close the public hearing. We'll go right to it. Okay.
Do we need Gwen
Gwerthen and Kate Cooper.
Okay. Good morning.
Good morning.
For the record, Kate Cooper Richardson, Chief of Staff of the State Treasurer. And I have, I'm passing around a summary of the primary changes in House Bill 3482. Most of them are very small, almost housekeeping items. The primary pieces, though, are the expansion, as Paul noted, the expansion of eligible projects to include all qualified 501c3s, and also the expansion of the membership of the authority from 5 to 7 members. This is a pretty active authority, and because of that, and we have membership all over the state, and these are also busy people in their regular lives, we want to make sure that we don't have any problems reaching a quorum. It will also provide an opportunity to just increase the smart people from all parties and the perspective from around the state. The other provisions go to some of the appointments. Although DOJ has said that it probably is the case that, of course, the members do serve at the pleasure of the state treasurer. Usually that's something that's included in statute, and so we included that piece here. The removal of the language regarding political or party affiliation, no one really knows why that was there, except that historically we believe, and we understand from people who are around, that when this was created, it was a provision stuck in to get votes. you know, sometimes those deals are cut. And so I've heard that. It's a rumor. But it hasn't served any utility that we can determine in the last few administrations. And so the authority recommended and the treasurer also recommended that that be removed. As it happens now, of course, we have all members, but it's not a political organization whatsoever, the type of work. And Gwen can give you a little bit of preview on that. But we didn't think it served any utility anymore and may serve a limiting factor. It also kind of leaves an impression that it is political, and it really isn't. And most of the other changes then are just clarifications and form and style changes. If you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them, but I think that the executive director here, Gwen Griffith, can give you a little preview on what the authority does.
Good morning, Senators. Thank you for this opportunity. I'm Gwen Griffith, and I'm the executive director of OFA, the subject of this bill. I've given you some materials on background for OFA. OFA, of course, supports this bill, and I'd like to tell you a little story to tell you why we support this bill. Last week, I had the chance to visit with one of our gold standard nonprofits down in Eugene, the Pearl Buck Center. Its mission is to help those who are developmentally disabled to lead independent lives. And we toured the facility, and we talked to the people who are being served, and we looked at their plans for a new building. 120,000 square feet of a new building, wonderful location, allows them to consolidate their campuses and get out of a difficult situation with a building that's structurally unsound. But I had to tell them that they do not qualify for OFA financing at this time. They understood that, but of course they looked at me with those puppy dog eyes and said, why not? Why not us? Why a Willamette University and not Pearl Buck Center? And I did not have a good answer to that question. I have the lawyer's answer, you're not in the statute. Mm-hmm. That is not an acceptable answer. OFA supports the main thrust of this bill because we think that all the 501c3s in the state are worthy of considering tax-exempt bond financing, not just the four kinds that are in the bill at this time. I'd like to speak to the question of political party affiliation because I think there's been some concern about that. I thought it might be helpful for you to know what authority members actually do on the authority, what kinds of decisions come before them. Then you can decide how partisan you think it is. The first kind of decision that they have is structural in terms of how do we coordinate our programs. For example, the authority is currently structuring the Express Bond Program. It's a new approach for OFA. Traditionally, OFA has served large nonprofits with relatively large bond offerings. We want to make this approach available to the smaller nonprofits all around the state. Instead of a $30 million bond, a $2 million bond, or a $5 million bond. So the authority members are called upon to make policy decisions about how that program should be structured. Technical questions like how many years of audited financial statements. I doubt that that's a Republican or a Democratic issue. The second area where authority members operate is in the area of community value. When a nonprofit comes to OFA, they have to show that the facility that's being proposed will help them extend their mission and build community value. They also have to show that the bond financing is of benefit to them, economic benefit. So what the authority members have to do is analyze that. Is there a community benefit, and is this a properly structured transaction? That doesn't require being a Democrat or Republican. It requires having a passion for nonprofit services and a fascination with finance. Now, that's not a combination that comes along very often. I have five board members. They're excellent. They have a passion for nonprofits and a fascination with finance. We think that expanding that pool is a good idea rather than restricting it. We're looking forward to having more than five board members as we move around the state. So with that, I would be happy to answer any questions. Thank you, and we urge you to move this bill to the floor.
Any questions?
Mr. Chair.
Yes. Senator.
appreciate your testimony. Has the limitation on party affiliation at all restricted your ability to find qualified people in the state of Oregon? There's a couple million registered voters of both parties in this state.
Mr. Chair, Senator Charles, I'll answer that since the treasurer is the appointing authority. I think it has limited because I'll back up and say this. When the treasurer first came into office, actually, there wasn't a list somewhere that told the political party affiliation of the current members. So we had to do some checking because I'm not sure that it all was, that the appointing authority at all was remembered to look. So we had to ask the members, or well, I guess we could have gone to the Secretary of State and looked it up.
It's pretty easy to find out.
It is pretty easy to find out now. But it is. It has been a limitation in that it, while we're looking for the primary qualifications about their background, because there are some qualifications about construction, finance, and some of those qualifications, it limits in that it may have the pool at that point, but we've never been able to not find somebody to meet that.
Mr. Chair, I just submit that that party registration means more than necessarily I think what party registration can represent is just a person's perspective on the world, and having multiple, or at least having two, maybe three perspectives on the world as it relates to the work of OFA, I don't know that that's a bad thing.
Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, I don't think the removal or the suggested removal of that was because it was a bad thing. It just didn't seem to be of any utility. And the current authority, the prior authorities, and the House didn't see an issue with that.
Well, the Senator does.
Certainly, I understand.
We're not going to be moving it, so... think about what you want to do. Okay, well,
right.
Thank you.
Thank you
very much. We're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3482A, and we're going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 3538.
One Senator
Westman, we have representative, and we have. If you gentlemen will give us just a second, we will do our appropriateness here by hearing about the bill.
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
Good morning,
members of the committee. House Bill 3530 comes to you from your counterpart on the House side. 3530, a bill that does not happen too many times in life. However, it did happen. It came because of law changes in the 2005 session. The 2005 session was Senate Bill 341 at that time. Allowed for certain provisions for the newly incorporated city at that time, the city of Damascus. And it allowed the city of Damascus, after finding itself, after it incorporated, that it did not have the process of finding finances to satisfy its initial obligation of starting to hold business. Although it did have tax levying authority at the time of the election, it came at the same time that you would have traditionally levied that tax and collected it. So it had to wait a whole year before it could get that. So it needed that bridge financing scheme, and that set up Bill 341 of the 2005 session did. However, in that time, the law, as you would see the bill in the second page, restricted that ability to cities that are incorporated after January 1st, 1990. That's on line 16. And it is within an urban growth boundary. Obviously, the new city of Lapine, which this bill is trying to allow for, is not within an urban growth boundary. So that was the impetus of the bill, is to remove the urban growth boundary restriction and allow for the city to be able to do it. It became also an A because it was declared an emergency as effective on passage for the whole purpose to be immediate, if you will, and that they will be able to do what they needed to do.
Thank you, colleagues. Oh, yes, Senator Monroe.
Will LaPine have to create their own urban growth boundary at some point?
Probably. I think that is within the land use law.
Right. That was my understanding. Right. If you're an incorporated city, you need to have an urban growth boundary unless you're a part of the metro urban growth boundary. Okay.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I'm Gene Wisnett, State Representative, District 53, which includes the newest city in Oregon, LaPine. And thank you, Senator Monroe and Senator Starr, for hearing this bill. It is an emergency. They need money. The new mayor had to buy postage stamp out of his own account for a while to answer mail. Senator Westland, sitting here with me, was able to get the governor to give him a grant to start the operation. And we've had really good help from the neighboring cities, loaning them, giving them computers and desks and other operations. They've now hired a city manager, which is going to help them, and then they'll be working on their urban growth plan and the other things that they will as a new city. Your staff administrator has explained the bill to you very simple. We thought at first we could use the old bill for Damascus, and we couldn't because they did not have an urban growth area designated. So that's reason for the bill. It is an emergency. We'd hope you'd pass the bill as soon as possible so they can borrow money like the rest of us. So,
question, Senator Monroe.
How many people approximately in LaPine?
1,500, I think, was the population.
Okay. And what was the process of incorporation?
This is their fourth vote, and it was voted by the people in the last election.
Okay.
And I think one of the reasons it passed this time is they made it a smaller area, geographic area. LaPine is changing tremendously. A lot of there's no more great deals down there for real estate. Prices are going up. Senator Westland and I are working on one issue down there is a lot of them have septic systems, and that's presenting some problems because it's the beginning of the Deschutes River in that area, have the high groundwater table. So, but right now they need money, and you can help. Your gentleman can help us with that.
Mr. Chair. So giving them this bonding authority and so on might enable them to start working on creating a sewer system.
Well, they have one in LaPine City. It's really outside the city area where the problem is, Senator, Mr. Chair and Senator. But and it's not a bonding. It's actually they'll have to go get their own financing. Mm-hmm. All it does is say you can go, you know, you're going to anticipate getting this money, and they'll go to a local financial institution and get the money like Damascus did. And they're talking and working with Damascus. You know, before Damascus, you know what the last city to be incorporated in the state of Oregon was?
Kaiser. Park.
Kaiser.
Oh. Yeah.
So we don't have this happen often. So.
Okay. Very good. Senator.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Senator Ben Westland, District 27, and the newest city in Oregon, also happens to be proudly located in my district. This is really pretty simple. As infrequently as this occurs, I mean, the process is something akin to, you know, several years or many months prior to an election. Someone gets a twinkle in their eye and puts some, you know, numbers to paper and says, you know what, our community would be better off if we were incorporated. And so they work hard, you know, knock on the doors and do all the things we do, and after their fourth attempt, they actually won their election. So that election night euphoria soon dwindled by the next morning when they promptly received a bill from the county of Deschutes, and they realized they were not only broke, they were in red numbers. I mean, literally, had no money. And as the good Senator Wisnett stated, he was representative. I was trying to promote you.
But I'm not running against Senator Westland.
Yeah. But it sounded pretty good, Gene.
It sounds good, yeah.
Let's ring to it.
The mayor, Stu Martinez, and the city council just did yeoman's work. I mean, literally dipping into their own pocket for stamps and using their own cell phone. And it was really an amazing conundrum. I mean, you go to the post office to get a P.O. box, but you've got to have, you know, or you go to the phone company to get a phone, you've got to at least have a P.O. box. Well, they didn't have a P.O. box, so they had to go rent the P.O. box and then go back and get the phone. I mean, it was really, you know, a cauldron of chaos for a brand new democracy is what it amounted to. It's a great story. They're wonderful people. And all they're asking for, and all we're asking for in this bill, is that they be allowed to issue TANs, tax anticipation notes, on money they know will be coming in, that it just takes, you know, a while for that money to flow through the pipeline. So it's a very good bill. It's a very needed bill. And I hope we can encourage you to not only listen to us in this public testimony, but go into a work session and pass it to the floor.
Senator, I have a note from the chair, and the chair has told us to hold the bill. I don't think there's any problem. I can't see any reason why we can't move it, but he's the one that makes the decision. So we have two bills that we probably would have moved, but I'm not the chair.
Okay, well, thank you.
So tomorrow, I'm sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And yeah, I guess then Senator Wesson and I failed because when this bill was heard in committee in the House, Senator's son and my 21-year-old legislative assistant was able to get the committee to hear it and pass it immediately, so I guess we're not as good.
Yeah, I see an individual that looks a great deal like Senator Deckert sitting in fact, I'm sure that's Senator Deckert. You know, maybe he could
Well, it does say forward. Possible work session, so, you know, we could get in trouble, but we're not.
Thank you for hearing
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Yes,
Senator. Yeah, I applaud the people of Lapine and their long struggle with this. I applaud the action, the progressive action. Incorporation is the way to go for an urban area. They have much better control over all of the services that they need, and it's really tough to pass an incorporation vote of any kind or an annexation vote of any kind. And so I have great respect, and I'll be more than happy to support this bill. I'm sure we'll get it going as soon as Deckert comes back. He's flying in from Montana this morning and is supposed to be here in time for the floor session.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
LOC, Andy?
Andy Shaw at the League of Cities, just here to offer our support. Urge you to schedule this bill for work session and move it ahead so the city of Lapine can get its finances in order. Thank you.
Do we know if it is? Thanks, Andy. Do we know if it is scheduled for
tomorrow? I don't think it's scheduled for tomorrow.
Okay.
I think we're still under the 48-hour rule.
Mm. Yeah, because I didn't even look this morning. Okay, with that, is there anyone else who would like to testify on House Bill 3530? We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3538, and we'll open up a public hearing on House Bill 2239A. Mary is coming up to tell us what we're doing.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2239A modifies procedures for reviewing assessment rolls that are handled by the Department of Revenue. It modifies it in a way so that it makes changes in how the department will correct clerical errors and omissions. It adds omitted property to the tax rolls that are prepared by the Department of Revenue. And it sets specific dates, January 15th and I didn't add May 25th as well, when the department shall review tentative rolls for omissions and clerical errors. The two dates that I'm referring to deal with notification to taxpayers when the Department of Revenue is going to review the roll for omissions and clerical errors, not for a review to determine value. And under current law, these dates are, well, they're vague. They're second Monday in June or 20 days prior to the second Monday in June, which actually isn't a specific date. So These modifications are very, very minor. They do not involve changing value. That's a different process. They involve just changing how you're going to notice a taxpayer when you're going to review the roll for clerical errors and omissions.
Some of the language is just really fascinating. John?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is John Phillips of the Oregon Department of Revenue. Thank you for hearing this bill. This was brought to you by the department, and we did a kind of a thorough review of our what we call the centrally assessment statutes, which is statutes that guide how we assess and appraise large companies in Oregon. And we've discovered a lot of archaic terminology in this set of statutes. This was originally set out in 1909, and it hasn't really been touched a lot since then. There's been some updates, but as you can see from some of the examples that in the testimony, there's some pretty archaic language. There's also some sequential issues, things happening before other things need to occur, and so we're just sort of adjusting that. And also, the point that Mary brought out, it's probably key, is that it splits, in Section 5, it splits two processes. One where the director is reviewing the roll of all assessments for the current year, which is not yet final, but it's in the process of being final, and then corrections made to rolls that are final from other years, could be 5 years back, 10 years back, 1 year previously, and the procedure is different. And there are some due process parts that are absent in the current law, and we're borrowing the due process language from the way the assessors correct, like residential or commercial kind of properties. So we're borrowing that and pasting it into this section so it's mimicking it so that the procedures are the same. So I'm happy to go over it section by section if you'd like, or answer any questions about any provision in the bill, but that's an overall summary of what's going on in the bill.
Yeah, Senator Monroe.
You know, this is what we used to call a housekeeping bill.
That's right.
Clearly. I mean, it has really no, there's really no substantive change. It just cleans up language.
Right.
And makes the statutes more understandable, and so I'm ready to go on it.
I think we had to pick up and use this one, setting forth that it will attend.
We try to do that as much as we can, setting forth so that we can attend. It is pretty archaic. There is provisions for the division administrator to deliver to the director the role, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, you know, it's, some of the technology changes we have today, it just, some of the language doesn't make sense. The two dates that Mary also mentioned, the second Monday before, 2 weeks before the second Monday in June. We think that for this, it'll help taxpayers know a date certain annually, like Christmas. You know, it's always on the 25th.
Mm-hmm.
They'll know when they're going to receive their notice, when it's going to be mailed, and when they'll get a chance to request a review before the director and those kinds of things. So, we did meet in the interim with industry. We had about I think 3 or 4 meetings. We walked through the statutes in this section of law. We talked about issues that they had, that we had. You know, we tried to come up with solutions, and this is the result of those meetings. So we're happy to bring this to you today.
Very good. Any further questions?
About time we cleaned up the language. I mean, 1909, that's even before you were born, right?
Almost. Yeah.
Sorry.
Hey, I think you checked the birthday.
We found out he's a year older than me.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
All right.
Thank you.
We're in good shape. If you see us slowing down right now, we're waiting for one of our senators to appear. Mm-hmm. So at this point, I'm going to go ahead and close our public hearing on House Bill 2239A, and I will open a work session on House Bill 2239A.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
We get to move this one, huh?
We have permission to move this one.
Mr. Chair, I would move 2239A to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation.
Senate Bill 2239A has been recommended to be moved to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Without objection of the committee, I'll just ask in advance that when Senator Burdick arrives, that she'll be able to cast a vote on this. We'll go through the procedure anyway. Let's go ahead and move on that. So let's go ahead and cast the vote.
Senator Burdick?
Aye.
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 Excused
again. House Bill 2239A will be sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation. We have a carrier.
You like this efficiency streamlining? Yeah, I'd be happy to carry this. Right.
Senator Monroe will carry it. I will close the work session. Still on just a little bit on House Bill 2239, and we will open a public hearing on House Bill 2104A.
Mr. Chair and Committee, House Bill 2104A deals with property, intangible property held by...
Could I have you stop?
Yes.
Our senator is going to need to leave again. We just voted. We've stalled a little bit for you. So I need to go back and reopen that as a work session, right? Okay, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2104A for a second. And I'm going to reopen the work session on House Bill 2239 for the purpose of a vote. Senator Burdick.
Oh, and thank you, Mr. Chair. I vote yes. I thought you needed my vote. Otherwise, okay. I wouldn't have busted you.
Okay.
I vote yes.
All right. All right. We'll close the work session on House Bill 2239A. Sorry about that. And I better reopen that public hearing on House Bill 2104A.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 2104A deals with the dormancy period for property held by financial institutions and tangible property. So this is mainly various kinds of accounts with these institutions. What it does is to shorten the dormancy period from 3 years to 5 years before that property has to be turned over to the Department of State Lands and deposited into the unclaimed property account. So going from 5 years to 3 years, it makes a couple of other adjustments to the statutes. It changes the notification method from certified mail to first-class mail for financial businesses to give notice to owners of assets before they can impose service charges, stop interest payments, or levy fees, so that the owner of the asset has to be notified of that. And the other change deals with financial property that is automatically renewable, like a CD, and it allows the owners to consent to that renewal to be indicated by the financial institution sending a notice by first-class mail or electronic mail, and then the financial institution not receiving any kind of notice that the statement is undeliverable. So then the property would be renewed. What this bill does is to have a one-time speed-up in the amount of unclaimed property that would be deposited with the Department of State Lands and probably trigger an increase in the distribution from the account to school districts and probably roughly on the order of $7 to $8 million in 2009-2011.
Okay, thanks.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Cindy Wickham. I'm the Unclaimed Property Administrator for the State of Oregon. I provided written testimony to you, and as this committee has heard quite a bit about unclaimed property in the past few weeks, I thought if it was okay, I wouldn't go through the overview of the program or what the law is about, but just briefly talk about the bill. Essentially, as staff mentioned, reducing the dormancy period for all property that is 5 years, currently has a five-year dormancy period. State Lands proposed to do that for several reasons. One of them is that we have about five or six different dormancy periods that we're managing. This would essentially collapse that and get rid of the five-year dormancy period and make it a little bit easier for us to manage. It also makes it easier for the holders of entities that are reporting the unclaimed property. Another thing that this would do is that it will encourage these companies that have this property to search for the owners earlier at 3 years rather than waiting for 5 years. And I think that in the long run, they're going to find more owners before they turn it over to the state. So there's a benefit to the owners by shortening this dormancy period. Also, over 30 states have shortened their dormancy periods on this type of property to 3 years. It's particularly of importance to our neighbors to the north, the state of Washington, and the southern state of California. Most of the holders of the banking institutions that report this property are also reporting to those states. So this makes it a little bit easier for them to manage just one dormancy period for all states. The second part of this is to the service charge assessment. Currently, the statute says that they have to notify the owner by certified mail. I think that's cost prohibitive for the businesses. I think most companies anymore do not assess service charges, so we just thought maybe we could make this a little bit easier. It does not remove the requirement to search for the owner. This is separate than looking for the owner and trying to reunite them with their funds. This is merely the mechanism where they have, if they are going to charge them for sending it to the state, they have to notify them in advance. We did work prior to putting this bill together. We did work with the Oregon Bankers Association to address their issue on the time certificates, and that will also help them as well as the owners in order to allow those things to continue to renew without the positive owner contact that's required for most accounts. We've also talked with the regulatory agencies as well as insurance companies and folks in the securities industry, and we have no known opposition to the bill. And with that, I'd be more than happy to answer any questions.
Questions? Thank you. Let me get back here. All 50 states have adopted a version of the Uniform Unclaimed Property Act. Do you know offhand how many of the states do use a three-year? I mean, it makes sense to me to line up, but do we line up also with Idaho or Nevada?
Senator George, members of the committee, I don't know. Idaho, I think, maybe 7 years. There's a few states that still have 7 years on securities and bank bank accounts. I believe it's 33 states have the three-year dormancy period.
Okay. Very good. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your time.
Gentlemen, we're restricted on this one, too. Is there anyone else who would like to testify in 2104A? Okay, I'm going to close the public hearing then on House Bill 2104A. And is there any further business to come before the committee? All right. We're done. Thanks.
Mm-hmm.